Area 10 Faith Community meets in the historic Byrd Theater in Carytown in Richmond, Virginia. We worship together at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings, both in person and online at youtube.com/Area 10 Church. Kid-friendly programming is also available at the same time just down the street at 2810 at Community Gathering Place. We hope to see you at the Byrd Theater soon. Now, onto this week's message.
A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Grottoes, Virginia, and go explore the Wires Cave. Have you ever, anybody ever been to Wires Cave? Yeah, so apparently, if you follow their information, they'll tell you this cave is the most longest running tour cave in the world. So they've been giving tours in this cave for like 200 years or something like that. So it's kind of interesting. You go through. Well, before you go into the cave, they have this room that you can walk through, and it's a lot of people historically who have written things about the cave. And so I was in there and I was reading it, and they had some letters there that people had written that mentioned this cave. And one of them was from the Civil War. There was this general soldier guy, a leader of this regiment or whatever. And this was right at the end of the Civil War. The war was winding down, and apparently there just wasn't a lot to do at the end of the war. People are just kind of hanging out, and the soldiers were hanging out. And he writes about the soldiers being kind of bored, and he actually says this. I pulled this right out of the letter. It says this: "There is not enough to do to keep up our energies. Several officers and men have sought to dissipate the ennui of our situation by visiting Wires Cave." And I read this and I had a couple thoughts. One is, man, why don't we talk like that anymore? Like, here's a soul. This isn't a poet. This is a soldier from 1865 going, "They have sought to dissipate the ennui of their situation by visiting Wires Cave." I'm like, this is amazing that everybody, like, we all think we're smarter. I don't know that we were. I think maybe they were smarter than us and they're talking like that, and we wouldn't talk that way. I was like, that's kind of cool. But I also thought about, yeah, I bet it does just kind of stink to just be out there, and I bet you do feel this sense of ennui, which is not a word we use very often. Ennui, I looked up, it literally means like weariness, dissatisfaction, boredom. So ennui, right? It's actually, I just found out in the new Pixar movie, the Inside Out movie, one of the new emotions in that movie is going to be ennui. So we're bringing it back, baby. Let's bring back ennui. And I actually think we could bring it back in a lot of instances because, you know, it's a good word. It has meaning. Like maybe Netflix, you know how it comes on and it's like, are you still watching? It should come on and be like, has your ennui dissipated? You know, that would be cool. Or maybe like we should announce it. When we're standing in line, you're standing in line waiting at the grocery store and you grab your phone, you should be like, I'm trying to dissipate my ennui, everybody. Just give me a second, you know? Or you're scrolling through a dating app and after about 10 pictures or so, the app should pop up and be like, how's the ennui? Just checking in. Are you still feeling that restlessness or whatever? Like, I think it's a good word. Now, we don't use that word. Maybe if we were going to give it another name for our ennui of our situation that we have today, we might call it plain old boredom. We've used that word before. We might call it restlessness that we all feel. But I would propose that the word that captures ennui in 2024 is the word meh. And I promise you that's a feeling you've had before, meh. It's a great word because it almost sounds like it feels. You know, you say it, it's just this exhalation of air. It's meh. And it's meh. It's boring. It's lame. It's tired. It's stale. It's meh. And you've all felt it, right? You've felt meh before. You know what that is. It's the feeling you get when you watch Netflix and you're trying to figure out what you want to watch, and there's like a million shows on there and there's nothing to watch. You're like, why can't I find anything to watch? It's terrible. It's the feeling you get when you try to watch your favorite sport, but you're like, money has corrupted the game and this isn't even any good anymore. I used to enjoy this. I don't even like it now. It's that feeling you get when you scroll through the dating app and you're like, there's a million fish in the sea, but this is not interesting anymore. Like, it's just, there's no great choices here. It's that feeling you get when her new album comes out and you're like, it's not as good as her last album and she's gone downhill and you're frustrated about that. It's that feeling you get when the weather is is like not perfect and you're like, ugh, the weather, it could have been better today. I wish it was. It's a feeling you get when you read the book and you're like, it's not like his other books. His other books were stronger. This isn't his good work. It's the feeling you get when you hear the song and you're like, that song doesn't do it for me. Or you come to worship and you're like, worship did not make me feel this thing today that I was hoping to feel. That's the feeling that you get. And it's the feeling you get when you say, oh, I used to go to these parties, and the parties were cooler back in my day, and now you kids are lame, and you don't have the parties. It's just not, and everything is not as good as it used to be. That is the feeling of meh. And we have all felt it. And it's not new. It's not new. Historically, people have felt meh. Now, I would argue you're going to feel a lot less meh when you have to hunt for food every day. You still don't have time for meh, right? But historically, people have felt it, especially when things have gotten good for them. You can read about it. If we go back 3,000 years to a guy named Solomon, who was king of the Jews. And Solomon, as king in Israel, he had some meh going on. And it's weird because Israel was never like a major superpower. You know, if you want to talk about superpowers of the ancient world, you can go to Egypt and Assyria and Rome. Israel was small, but they had their heyday. And Solomon was king during Israel's heyday, at about 1000 BC-ish, around that time frame. Solomon is king, and this is when things are good for Israel. And so Solomon, as king of a prosperous nation, he decides to get some of the excesses that come with that prosperity. And he writes about it in Ecclesiastes. Now, he writes Song of Solomon. If you've ever read that, it's kind of a romance-y kind of thing of like a young man loving this woman. And then he writes Proverbs, which feels a little bit more middle age of like, I've learned some things, son. Let me tell you a few things, my son. Here's some wisdom. And then Ecclesiastes, which feels like an old man kind of sitting there going like, all right, I've tried everything. Where are we at? You know, and it's kind of this progression of his life. And Solomon, really, he had tried it all. In fact, here's how Solomon is written about in the book of 1 Kings when it writes about his life. It says this, now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives who were princesses. That's good for them. That's nice. And 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. Now, a lot of people freak out that this kind of stuff's in the Bible. They think the Bible is like this morality tale, and it's just telling nice things about nice people doing good to all the good people all the time. And the reality, there's a lot of history in there, and they record it as it is. And so you read about polygamy, 700 wives and 300 side women that he has. And you read that and you go like, gross. Like, that's 1,000 souls that he's using for his pleasure. Like, this is terrible. And it is terrible. The Bible records that polygamy was a thing in the ancient world, pretty popular thing. And he's doing it too. But notice it doesn't say, and that was a great thing and it worked out really well for Solomon. No, they go, this is part of his downfall. This is part of the thing that just wrecked the guy, is he was enamored with all of these women. He was enamored with the novelty of that. So that guy, Solomon, with 1,000 women and all the wealth, he writes in Ecclesiastes, and I want you to hear how he describes his life later in life. He says this, I said in my heart, so this is Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with mine, and my heart still guiding me with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under the heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than anyone who had been in before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became
great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was the reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was all meh. Actually, it doesn't say that. In verse 11, it says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. But he's saying meh, right? I tried everything, and it was lackluster. And he felt restless about it. And this should be instructive for us, because we need to pay attention to this. Because we think that the reason we feel meh is we haven't done enough. If I made a little more money, if I had one more experience, one more vacation, one more sexual partner, one more high, one more show to watch, one more music concert, one more thing to attend, if I could get just one more, then I won't feel so meh. And Solomon should blow that out of the water for us, because he had it all. He's like, no, I've done that experiment. And look at the list of what he did. He was wealthy, so wealthy. And he's starting public works projects. He's like, I'm going to plant gardens and I'm going to tend the garden. That'll be cool. And I'll have some pools of water that I'm going to form. And I'm going to make all these parks and these great monuments. I'm going to build this thing. And like, this is the stuff people do. You know, he stopped short of like flying to the moon and starting Teslas. But he was near the like, you know, I'm just going to do all of the things. And he's trying it all. And he did it, you know. And so if you think like, man, I just need to party a little more. No, Solomon partied for like with 1,000 people for days and weeks on end. He tried that already, and he's letting you know it's not going to do it for you either. He bought people, and we're like, dude, slavery's bad. Yeah, absolutely. But this is what people in the ancient world with power, this is a flex. I'm going to own people, and he talks about it. He drops a little note in there. He says, I basically got musicians when I wanted them. Isn't that crazy? Like, you go to a concert, you're like, oh, that's cool. Solomon, he would go hear Drake, and he'd be like, now I bought you. You're going to buy my record? No, I'm buying you, and now you just make music for me. That's how Solomon would roll. And he's done all that stuff, and he goes, it's just not all that. I've tried it. It's kind of empty. And I know we see echoes of that in our modern world. It's not just Solomon. You can hear it if you listen closely. You can hear people saying it now about their life. Listen to Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey says, I wish everyone could get rich and famous and everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that that's not the answer. Brad Pitt says this. Success is a beast, and it actually puts the emphasis on the wrong thing. You get away with more instead of looking within. One of my favorites, I've used this one before. Tom Brady, after he won 3 Super Bowls, said this. There's times when I'm not the person that I want to be. Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey, man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. But me, I think, God, it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. And he said that after 3 Super Bowls, he went on to win 4 more, and I bet he's still itching to get even one more. Because you can hit the top. You can arrive in your field, and you're still going to feel meh. And people who have done it are trying to tell you that. They're trying to let you know, man, it's meh. And I know what you're thinking, because like me, when you hear that stuff, you're like, okay, maybe, but let me try it at least. Like, let me make a run at it, because I bet that if I got all of that money, that fame, that success, I bet if I hit those career highs and accomplished all those things, I bet I would handle it better than Jim Carrey, Tom Brady, Brad Pitt, any of these people. I bet I would handle it all right. I'd be good. I'd be nice to people. Success wouldn't change me. I'd be fine. That's what we believe. But learn from history. Learn from everyone who's gone before us. Getting everything we've ever wanted doesn't actually turn out well for us or for the people who know us and love us. It doesn't work, because the meh is not just a financial thing. It's not just a relational thing. It is a soul-level thing. Our souls
are designed for more. They're designed for God. St. Augustine said this, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you. Our heart and soul will cry out, meh, until we actually get connected into God and know him." So how do we handle this restlessness, this feeling of meh in our lives? Because I think in this series, we're talking about constellations, and just like constellations would point the way in the night sky, I think the restlessness, the meh, can point us to something deeper if we handle it well. So how do we handle that ennui, that restlessness, the boredom, the meh? How do we make it dissipate in our lives, and where can it point us? Let me give a couple ideas. Number one, stop swimming in the infinity pools. Solomon had angst not because he hadn't done enough. He had angst because he did it all, and it still came up empty for him. He had that life where it's like, this is limitless. And we live in a country where we kind of go, oh, this is, you're free. Like, you can do what you want. And we think that's the greatest thing. Oh, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. And we think that kind of limitless freedom, or the concept of this limitless freedom, we think this is going to be the best thing in the world for us. This is going to be so amazing. But the truth is, the limitless kind of freedom ends badly for us and for those who love us. So stop swimming in the infinity pool. Stop, in other words, stop exposing yourself to things that will take your time and energy, and that they have no end. There's no end to these things. These things that are demanding your time, and they want you to constantly engage them, because that constant engagement is going to drive some of the restlessness. So examples of the infinity pools. An obvious one is social media, and a lot of people will dog on social media, including me, on the regular. But have you noticed how much it's changed over the last couple years? I'm old enough to remember on social media feeds when it would say things like you would scroll to see what's new, and then this little message would come up and it would say, you're up to date, as if to say, you're done here. You've seen all the things that are new now. And you'd be like, oh, I'm up to date. I guess I could put this down. Did you notice it doesn't do that anymore? It's an infinity pool that you're swimming in. It goes on forever. You can constantly, new things to see, new pictures, new memes, novelty, different experiences. This is done on purpose. It is done to capture your attention and to eat up all your time. There's endless novelty. Think about the idea of an all-you-can-eat buffet. That I remember that being like the jam when I was a kid, when my parents would take us to this all-you-can-eat buffet. They had this thing that was a Lazy Susan. I don't know how poor Susan got this name, but it was this like rotating thing, and there's these different foods come around, and I just thought it was the greatest thing in the world. Like, you can go up there and wait for the thing to come by, and you grab the little apple pie, and you wait for it to come by, and you grab the macaroni, and you can just do this forever. And I just thought, oh, that's so cool. Like, all you can eat, like, this is limitless. And that's cool, right? That's kind of neat. What a country, right? You have this. But if you had the all-you-can-eat buffet every single day, people would look at you like, I think you have a problem. Like, you need to, like, push away from the table every now and then. Like, you can't just keep having all-you-can-eat. Like, that's not a healthy thing. And social media is the all-you-can-eat buffet of the digital world. In fact, they even call it a news feed. Like, they're feeding you. Like, that should be the cue, right? Like, they're trying to feed us this limitless supply of information. And I'm telling you, that is driving some of the restlessness. Stop swimming in the infinity pool. Another infinity pool, pornography. And I think this is actually where you can see in Solomon, he's with 1,000 women, and there's endless variety and different kinds of women. It was describing where they're all from, so they're all culturally, sort of ethnically different, and they all look very different. And so these are 1,000 souls that he is using for his pleasure, which is horrible. And it's almost infinite of the options that are there for him. And we look at that and we go, that's terrible. But doesn't pornography kind of do the same thing? It gives you this endless novelty, these endless options of images to look at. You don't have to be satisfied with one. Have plenty, have options, have variety. As we say, variety is the spice of life. This is the stuff that we say and we believe. And what happens? We experience sexual dysfunction as a society, less people having sex, less often, less satisfying. Why is that? We have more options than ever before. Well, yes, that is why it is that. We have more options than ever before, and it's not helping. It's making us feel restless and meh. It desensitizes us to the real thing. It rewires our brains. There's plenty of studies on that. Look at porn as the new drug. It rewires our brains. It is like a lot like sugar consumption. We all know, or we have a sense of like, sugar is probably not good for you. It's kind of a poison, that kind of thing. But the more we have of it, the more used to it we get, and the more of it we need to feel that rush again. This is what type 2 diabetes is all about, right? Type 2 diabetes is your body's been producing insulin so much to handle all the sugar you're taking in that you become insulin resistant, and you need to keep producing it, and it leads to all sorts of health problems. A lot of you, maybe you're experiencing it, or you know people that have gone through it. This is a difficult situation to be in, and pornography is sort of the type 2 diabetes track of lust and of your thought life and all that. So there's a lot going on there. These are infinity pools. They are never satisfied. You jump in and you can swim in them forever. And the longer you are in them, the more desensitized you get and the more things are just going to feel like meh. So stop swimming in the infinity pools. Jordan Rayner, he says it this way. I want to put his quote up on the screen. With all infinity pools, swim at your own risk. There's no lifeguard on duty, and it is far too easy to drown in the never-ending noise. So number one, stop swimming in infinity pools. And related to that, number two, take on meaningful limitations. The scripture doesn't necessarily use the word limitations like that. It doesn't say, oh, you should take on limitations. What it will talk about is the idea of discipline, which, if you think about it, is limitations, right? Discipline is do this at this time and in this way. In fact, I love this passage from Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 12. Listen to the way the writer of Hebrews talks about discipline. Consider him who endured from sinners such talking about Jesus, who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son? Let me find it. You got it? Do you have the next slide? One more. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Now, a lot of his context there that he's giving us is, hey, we all had fathers who disciplined us, or he says we should, right? We all had someone who disciplined us. And just like that was for your good because they loved you, they disciplined you, God is also disciplining you in some ways, and he's doing it for your good. He is trying to help you grow. And discipline, I would argue for in the language, is discipline is just taking on limitations. It is living under some guardrails for your life. It's practicing some sort of discipline. And we're familiar with that the discipline can bring freedom, or that the meaningful limitations can help us. We're familiar with it when you talk about financial freedom. If you want to be free financially, you have to live under the discipline of spending within a budget. If you want freedom in your health, you need to live under the discipline of not eating absolutely everything you want to eat and maybe moving around a lot more and exercising. If you want to have a clear mind, you have to have the discipline of blocking out a lot of the noise that's coming at you all the time. If you want to have a great career, you have to have the discipline of actually showing up day in and day out and doing the work so that you can advance in your career. Taking on meaningful limitations is actually the way that we are designed to live and to flourish. And And we need to think about how can I take on more meaningful limitations. This is one of the biggest challenges, I think, in the demographic that's 18 to 25, is college is sort of set up, and sort of that early young adulthood is kind of set up of don't take on meaningful limitations. You know, try everything, which is the opposite of meaningful, you know, tied down to something. And I think there's a lot of meh in that time of life. But think about meaningful limitations and how useful they are to you. Joining the military is a meaningful limitation. They're going to tell you what to eat, where to go. They're going to deploy you. And you're going to do it. If you do it right, you're doing it for the honor and for doing a good thing for your country. It's a meaningful limitation. Getting married is a meaningful limitation. It is definitely a limitation. If you are married, you cannot go do whatever you want whenever you want, right? I don't know. Is your marriage different than mine? You cannot, right? You can't go do whatever you want when you're married. And you have gone from like the variety pack of life to I'm just going to have just this one thing and this is it. And that is a limitation on your life. And we talk about it. We joke about it that way. Oh, yeah, you're getting tied down. The old ball and chain. These things people used to say in years gone by. But it is a meaningful limitation. And when people go, oh, you're getting tied down, I just want to be like, thank God for that. Thank God somebody is tying you down. Thank God you were taking on this meaningful limitation because it is so good for you to take it on. It changes you and it's profound. Having children is a meaningful limitation. Parents, am I right? You cannot go anywhere anymore, really, basically. Like, it is a limitation. You want to go out? You know, used to be like, let's go out Friday night. No, you are not going out Friday night. They still have to be fed. They eat every day, multiple times, and they can't even make their food. You're making it for them. This is a limitation. You are now making someone's sandwich before you make your own. It is rough, right? But it is meaningful. It's a limitation, absolutely, but it's so good for you to not just think about yourself. It's good for me. It's good for me to be responsible to and for a wife and three sons. That has profoundly changed me in a way nothing else will. It has changed me because, you're probably thinking, Chris, you're not like a loose cannon. Sure, I'm not a loose cannon, but I got a little loose cannon in me, you know, like you do. And I need someone to tie that cannon to the deck. So it didn't just blow all over the place, you know? Like, I got to tie it down, be smart, and take on the meaningful limitations wherever you can. When you read your Bible, that is time spent that you're not doing something else, and actually reading a book is a limitation on your time. When you join a small group, you're going to show up, or a formation group, you're going to show up at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and that means that on 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, you can't watch TV, you can't be with other people, you can't stay after for the happy hour at work. You have to be with a group. That is a limitation on your freedom and on your time, but it's a meaningful one because over time, it shapes you and forms you. That is the reason to do it. When you serve someone in the church or on a Saturday somewhere and you're out serving people, that is time spent that you could have been doing something else. Therefore, it is a limitation on your freedom and it is a meaningful limitation. It is a good thing to do these things, and there's so much that comes from it. And let me give you one more. Death is the ultimate meaningful limitation. And you're going to be like, well, duh, death is definitely a limitation. Like, you really slow down after you die. Like, you got a lot less going on. Right, but I would argue even the thought of death is a meaningful limitation. Just thinking, oh, this is me too one day. This is why I always say to people, because as a minister, I probably attend more funerals than the average person. And I always say, like, man, you got to go to at least a funeral a year, at least one, because you sit there with people who are grieving and you feel that, and you go, this is coming for me too. There will be a day that I'm the person. I'm not the person giving the talk. I'm not the person in the crowd. I will be the person in the casket. This is coming for me too. And the thought of that, the idea that you will die, helps you get serious. The ancient Stoic philosophers had a phrase they used to use. It was called memento mori, and it basically means remember that you will die. Remember that you will die. Just the thought of that can be a meaningful limitation on your life. If we didn't think we're going to die, I don't know if any of us would ever get serious about anything. But it is the thought that this is going to end someday that can drive us back into being serious about our life and about what we're doing and why we're doing it and where we're going. So number one, stop swimming in infinity pools. Number two, take on meaningful limitations. And then number three is this, dial into your true purpose. I love where Solomon goes, because through the whole book of Ecclesiastes, and you really should read it if you can this week, it'll be a limitation of your time to read that book. But if you get into it, it's not that long, 12 chapters, and he goes through everything, not just partying, but he goes through things that you would think are good, like charity work and all that. And he goes through how about how these things are meaningless. And at the end of the book, this is how he finishes it. He says this, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil." Solomon has tried it all, and his conclusion is, this is what it's all about. At the end of the day, here it is. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is what we're here for. I might change the wording of it now. Know him, follow him, be his disciple. Discovery, when I say dial into your true purpose, this can sound like a self-help meme. Oh, you need to just find your what color your parachute is and what your true purpose is, and I get that. And we're all wired differently, right? Usually when we say discover your true purpose, we start talking about individual wirings, like we all know how to do different things. There's things you're good at that I'm not good at. There's things I'm good at that you're not good at. And so we should do the thing that we're good at. This is what we mean when we say discover your true purpose. What are you here for? Go do it. And I like that. I believe in it. If you're a dancer, please dance. If you're a salesman, go sell some stuff. If you're a nurturer, then nurture things and bring relationships together. If you're a designer, design something. If you're a musician, make those sounds. It'll be fantastic for all of us. Do the thing. But I don't think any of those things are your true purpose. I think those things are unique ways you will fulfill your purpose. But I think, at least for followers of Christ, I think our purpose is clear and it has been set. We're supposed to be people who love God and love people. We're supposed to be disciples of Jesus who make other disciples. We're supposed to know him and then pass it on and share it with other people. This is our true purpose. This is what we're here for. And so we need to be disciples who make disciples and connect other people to that for eternity. And I think when we understand that that is our true purpose, this can affect our sense of meh and our sense of restlessness. In a good way, we can go, okay, this is not working out, career thing's not working out, dating life isn't where I want it to be right now, finances aren't where I want them to be, all of these things, put it all out there and go, none of these things are quite right and I feel a little bit of meh, but at least I'm grounded in this. At least I know who I am and I know who I belong to. I'm grounded in Christ. My identity is clear. I am a child of God. I'm not going to give in to every fear and desperation tactic in the world. I'm clear of who I am, and that clarity comes because we're dialed into our true purpose. We know what we're here for. There will be ups and downs, but the downs don't have to be so devastating because we're all going to go through it. We'll all go through it. There will be a pandemic. There will be an economic downturn. Things will not go like we want them to go. And if our lives are built around things going exactly like we want them to go, then it's going to go badly for them when it goes badly, right? But if our lives are built around what is my true purpose, what am I here for, know God, love him, follow him, invite others along the journey, it can be different. Knowing who I am, and I say this for me personally too, knowing who I am has helped me keep the meh away. I can be cynical. I can be as cynical as anybody. Some of you know me personally, you know, yeah, you can. I have my disappointments, and I have reasons to be cynical, I would say. But knowing who I am and who I belong to, knowing Christ, it pulls me out. I have to believe, and I've come to learn, that everything is not horrible. Everything is not hopeless. There is good in the world. So stop swimming in the infinity pools. Take on meaningful limitations. And dial into your true purpose. I believe that is going to be the greatest cure for your ennui. Let's pray. God, we can be very restless. We may have felt that this week. We may feel that this coming week. But God, help us to channel that restlessness and let it point us to you. Lord, may we take on the meaningful limitations that you've given to us, that you give to us out of love for us, not out of the ruining our fun, but you've given us meaningful limitations that will help us flourish. Lord, I pray that we take those on this week. In Jesus' name, amen.